You're listening to a podcast from 702.
702.
The Clement Maniatela Show.
Let's walk the talk.
All right, it's 20 minutes before 11 o'clock. I want us to talk about farming now. There's a question we asked last week. In fact, farmers who were calling in and asking if it's still economically viable to be a farmer under the current circumstances. You've got the war in Ukraine. You've got these high energy prices, load shedding, labor issues, persistent climate related challenges. And all of these things contribute to the sector struggling to keep costs manageable. And add to that the disruptions in the global supply chain, which will continue to have an impact on the markets probably well into 2023. And last week, I said we'll talk about this because I took two calls from farmers on the open line who were raising concerns about retailers hiking food prices, even though as farmers, they've not risen, right? They've not hiked their prices for what they sell to the retailers. In other words, they are not getting more for their produce, and yet their cost of production has gone up. And of course, retailers factor in transportation costs, and the fuel hikes have an impact on that. But some farmers say they are being shortchanged, and they're even asking government to intervene. We've invited agricultural economist at FNB Agribusiness, Paul Makube, to join us for this conversation. And if you're a farmer, I'd like you to call in or send us a WhatsApp voice note. Paul, thank you so much for making time. Good morning.
Good morning, and thanks for having me. Good morning to the listeners.
I also have AgriSA Executive Director Christo van der Riede joining us on the line. Christo, thank you for also making time. Good morning.
Good morning, and good morning to your listeners and to Paul.
So, Paul, I want us to start with what the farmers raised on the 702 open line yesterday. I took a call from one farmer who says it's actually quite concerning that the retailers are hiking their prices the way that they are. Yes, considering transportation cost, the fuel price that's going up, but they're saying they have not hiked the prices for the produce that they sell to the retailers, and they think something may be fishy here. I mean, is there any other way to explain it?
It's difficult to actually explain that, but let me just put some context. If you look at for example grains, we know that it's an open market, it's traded on exchange, and we know the transparency around the prices.
Yeah.
If you look at the livestock markets, you know, it's an auction system, direct sales, and so on, that happens in that market. If you look at the fresh produce markets, the major markets on the in South Africa are the ones that actually determines the price, and that's where supply and demand meet, and there's the price setting mechanism for that. But he's correct in saying that actually the farmer has limited ability to actually pass on price.
He's
a price taker, and that is that on that score, he's correct. So anything else that has to do with the consumer happens post farm, and that's where you mentioned the cost associated with transportation of the product, any transformation of the product beyond the farm gate. That's where the costs emanate.
Yeah. Christo, what has been the impact on this on the farmers? Because they feel like they are subsidizing retailers who have been hiking these food prices lately. And they're saying, look, the cost of production for us has gone up, and yet we are not getting any much more for what we are producing and selling to these retailers. But they are able to hike their prices with all, of course, the considerations that they make. And they feel they are subsidizing them. What do you think? What have you observed?
I think the entire agricultural value chain, from the farm to the retailer, is far more complex. And one shouldn't be quite wary about, just making assumptions. Because, as Paul has said, farmers in the first place are the price takers. They are not the price makers. And once that product leaves the farm, there's an entire value chain that ensures that product lands up on the shelf of of the retailers and then on eventually on the table of the consumers. And all of those activities within that part of the value chain beyond the farm gate adds to the cost. And we've seen significant rise in all kinds of costs, shipping costs, packaging costs, also the cost of diesel, the cost of electricity, and so forth. But what I want to emphasize is that there won't be a value chain without the farmer. The farmer plays a central role in terms of producing food. Without the farmer, there cannot be a John Deere or a Corteva who supplies the tractor or the seed, and the John Deere that supplies the tractors. Mm-hmm. And then on the other side of the farm gate, there won't be a big agro-processing company or a retailer without the farmer. And I think, you know, what needs to be happening is that one needs to make it easier for farmers to farm. Mm. Because they are under huge pressure. It's besides the rising input cost, there's also the volatility of commodity prices. Mm. There's crime, there's non-delivery by municipalities, there's non-delivery in terms of fixing of roads and stuff like that. Farmers are not taking all of those responsibilities on their shoulders, which is unfair. And that adds to the cost of farmers, because now the farmer must take care of his own security, the farmer must fix the road, the farmer must take the brunt when Eskom switch on the lights on and off.
And then you've got these machines that are also breaking. Absolutely. As well.
Absolutely.
Paul, one of the listeners who called last week, which is the reason we're having this conversation, said, I actually think it's not economically viable anymore to farm. And I wonder, given the challenges that you have witnessed, the challenges that Christo is talking about when it comes to farming today, what would be the impact and what's the potential impact on food security? And should we start having government talk about some interventions to help these farmers to deal with all of these multifaceted challenges they are facing now?
Yeah, I think it is important that we mention that it's critical that infrastructure, I mean, what Christo has mentioned is that there are these challenges that the farmer have to do extra than farming. So he's involved with farming, but he has to deal with these other issues that he should necessarily be getting from the public service. You have municipal situations where you know, water issues, you know, electricity issues, roads, where they have to, you know, do these things themselves. So those are the pressures that are outside the farm. So he has to deal with farm issues and then deal with things that are outside the farm. So the intervention of the state should be, you know, on that score to accelerate the infrastructure that should support agriculture. You need the necessary infrastructure such as roads, you know, electricity, water, and also the, you know, the railways that are necessary for moving grains.
All of that you mentioned is almost non-existent.
Yeah. So and you can see, you know, where the farmer finds himself.
Yeah.
And then he's hit with a, you know, fuel hike of you know, £4 you know, at the go. He has limited you know, ability to pass on that price. And then you have, you know, international situations where, you know, the fertilizer prices have increased, you know, significantly. You know, they account over 35% in some cases for the farmers in terms of you know, fertilizer you know, costs in their production. So those are the pressures that are there on the farmers. And over time, we have seen a situation where actually for the small guy, you know, medium-sized farmer, it becomes increasingly necessary to actually, you know, you know, increase, you know, production to building scale, and that involved, you know, farmers having to, you know, conglomerate, smaller farms becoming bigger to take advantage of scale.
Yeah.
And the technology that you use is not coming cheap. is quite expensive.
Sure.
Yeah. So then it becomes increasingly difficult for you to actually farm. Mm. Now, if you're talking about this, the very, very small farmer, or the emerging farmer, if that, those are the challenges at commercial level. Now, think about an emerging farmer.
Yeah, what more for them, right?
You know, that is even more, dire situation, from an infrastructure perspective.
Yeah, it's 10 minutes before 11 o'clock. After the break, I'd like to take some calls and some WhatsApp voice notes. If you are a farmer, how are you surviving when really it looks like so many odds are against you? And just in the long term as well, what's the impact of all of this on food security? And hopefully we're going to see some interventions from government, because as Paul says, if you think about these big conglomerates, just think, if they're being affected like that, how much more is the small-scale farmer, the one who's still emerging? I'll take your calls on WhatsApp voice notes when we come back.
You're with Clement Maniatella.
702.
It's 8 minutes before 11 o'clock. Is it still economically viable to be a farmer under the current circumstances? It's not just the war in Ukraine. You've got high energy prices. There's load shedding. That's messing up equipment, labor issues. I mean, farmers now have to pay people extra work because when there's load shedding, there are systems that are out. So you need people to stay and do some more work when the power is back. And you've got to pay them for working those extra hours. There's persistent climate-related challenges, and all of these things contribute to the sector struggling to keep the costs manageable. What are the impacts in the long term? We're speaking to Christoph van der Rede, AgriSA Executive Director, and Paul Makube, who is an agricultural economist at FNB Agribusiness. I want to take Koketso now, who's calling us from Magaliesberg. Koketso, good morning.
Yes, good morning, Clement, and good morning to your guests.
Yeah, you're a farmer. What's been your experience?
Yes, Clement, it's tough as emerging farmers or as developing farmers, with everything rising, the rising cost of inputs, fertilizers, as was mentioned by one of your guests, the fuel price and so on. So it really has been tough, but I'm more looking at it from a solution point of view to say, what is it that we can do? I think we also need to look around the world and see what other countries are doing. Like right now, I don't know if you are aware, with India, they had a huge farmer protest. I think it lasted for more than a year, where the farmers were basically protesting against the Indian government, because the Indian government wanted to do away with minimum prices for agricultural commodities. So I think we need to go back and look at the agricultural legislation on our side. A lot of it that was introduced shortly after 1994,
yeah,
that basically allowed the price to be dictated by the free market. So we need to look at mechanisms like that, and we need to say, okay, perhaps maybe setting a minimum price so that farmers can get wherever they sell their produce or their grains to the silos, or they sell their produce, their fresh produce, to the national fresh produce markets. There must be a minimum price that farmers are able to get from those platforms that allows them to cover their production costs.
Ah, got you. Koketso in Magaliesberg, thank you. Christo, do you think that would work, what Koketso is suggesting?
I'm very scared of any form of subsidies or any form of market interventions. I will rather support a more holistic approach. In other words, as I've said earlier, let's take care of the infrastructure. Secondly, let's make sure that make our markets much more attractive and sophisticated. We have serious problems at some of our municipal markets. And then thirdly, I think South Africa can become more reliant, self-reliant, in terms of fertilizer production. We do have phosphate mining here, and the Palabovo mine. That mine can really supply South Africans with cheaper phosphate. We've got Eskom that blows huge amounts of sulfur dioxide into the sky. There is technology that can take that sulfur out of whatever they blow into the sky, and that can also be used as fertilizer. Then in terms of urea, we import urea from China, but our municipalities are dumping all kinds of waste that you can think of into our river systems, instead of privatizing and turn our human waste into urea. So all of those possibilities exist. It's just a question of creating a conducive environment for people to want to invest and to expand production.
Mm.
Then, in addition to that, I mean, there we sit with massive gas fields in Mozambique. We've got fossil that produce petroleum from coal. So why don't we explore? The president has made a big noise about localization, but we are moving too slow in terms of exploiting our natural resources to the advantage of the farming sector and the broader South African community.
Yeah. So Paul, Christo speaks about creating a conducive environment for people to want to invest so that we expand that production. But nobody's going to invest when infrastructure issues are not sorted out. You mentioned rail earlier, you mentioned roads, you mentioned electricity. There are big challenges when it comes to infrastructure around these areas. And I certainly don't think there's some level of agency that government is demonstrating to deal with this. So how do we get those people investing so that we expand that production? And in the long term, we're not faced with a challenge when it comes to food security when these issues are not being addressed.
Yeah, so I think Christo will allude to the fact that there has been engagement between private sector, farmers and all stakeholders in the industry in terms of what we call the Agricultural Master Plan. And that plan actually outlines the challenges as we have, brought them forward for you and interventions that are necessary. We now need to move speedily to implementation of those, sector plans to actually, kickstart some of the, agro-processing and also, expanding on the agricultural production and ensure that we have, sufficient water, we have quality water available. And all those things will actually, help us to deal with this kind of situation. And on the issue of the price situation, I think we must identify what is the cause of the current problem before we intervene in markets, because historically there has always been a failure to intervene properly. The instruments that are available are inadequate to actually deal with that. So if you look at the historical trend in terms of how production has happened in the country, is that there's always a price response and a supply response on the market, and that tells you that there is the market is almost perfect.
Mm.
So in times of drought situation, the prices go up. There is no availability on the market, but the subsequent response is that farmers are enticed to actually produce more. So actually, at the moment, for the last 3 years, we're sitting with bumper harvests in the country. We're blessed with favorable production conditions, and we are sufficiently supplied. But I think the most important thing is that if you think that Eskom is a problem, wait until you have agriculture being a problem, then you are going to have a much deeper problem in the
country.
And
we are but slowly moving there, it's going to become a problem. And what is government doing about it? Paul, thank you so much for making time. Paul Makube, agricultural economist at FNB Agribusiness. Thank you to Christo van der Riede as well, Agri SA Executive Director.